This is a podcast recorded at CB Expo, Cannabis Business Expo and Conference, on September 16, 2023 in Dortmund, Germany. At the education stage, Pavel Kubu presented the following topic: Patient Stake Principle for Medical Cannabis Patients. Language, English. Enjoy your podcast listening.
Hello, everybody. Good morning still. Thank you very much for being here right now with us. This is the first presentation of the day here, and we appreciate you joining us. I get to have the fortune of joining my colleague and friend, Dr. Pavel Kubu, today to introduce the patient stake principle for medical cannabis patients. Pavel, would you like to begin
by just good morning. It's a big pleasure to get you presented, in fact, evolution which is going in medical ethics, as the patient stake principle is proposed as a new ethical standard how to work with patient medical data. And Bijan, over to you, and introduce us yet another important person for the story.
Thank you. So there's one name here we are not, our team member, our leader and founder, co-founder, Dr. Pierre Debs is not with us today. And my name is Bijan. I'm working with Pavel and Pierre to support in all business development efforts for HealChain and Chain Pharmaceuticals. So before we get started, quick question, quick show of hands. Who here has been to the doctor before? Okay. So all of you have medical records. Have any of you guys tried to access your medical records recently? Show of hands. I just came from Canada and tried to get your medical records in Canada. It's quite the headache, and you have to pay even to get them. So this is one of the main drivers that we want to kind of tackle with what we're talking about here today. We need to increase the control that patients have over their data and increase the transparency in this space. So without further ado, I would actually like to begin by telling you about what to develop the patient stake principle. One last show of hands. Has anybody here ever heard of Henrietta Lacks? No? Okay, great. Of course, Pavel, yes. Henrietta Lacks was an African-American woman from Virginia in the US. Her cells, actually, she had a very aggressive form of cervical cancer, and her cells were actually removed from her body for research in the 1950s. And these cells actually became essential tools for research and drug development over the following decades. This was done without her consent and without her knowledge. And actually, just recently, you would have seen in the headlines that Thermo Fisher, the company that was using her cells, had to actually settle with the family of Henrietta Lacks because they had used her cells over the past six, seven decades to generate income. And Henrietta's family, let alone Henrietta, nobody saw anything of this. And actually, I would recommend, I just came from Canada. I was visiting family, and I was telling my mother about this. And lo and behold, she actually had the book about Henrietta Lacks. And so for anybody that might be interested in learning more about her story, we highly recommend checking out the book. Or if there's any other Oprah fans in the building, then check out the movie as well, because the movie is also very good. And without further ado, Pavel, perhaps you can take it from here.
Yes, and how does the mutated cancer cell relate to our health data? In fact, it's very specific type, but still these are the individual health data. Her body created the mutation, which was lately commercialized on a global scale. There are discussions that with regards to the fact that she was never asked, and it took really more than a three quarters of century where at least their ears start to get compensated on that commercializing success, which the mutation her body created with the DNA data. It's showing how important and transformational can be the data our bodies are created are monitored by various healthcare, even social care providers in many type of digital storages. And it's already a big topic which many of us patients are not yet seeing, but there's already European Union proposing a new directive called European Health Data Space, which should in fact extend the GDPR requirements specifically for healthcare and clearly say who's the owner of the data and who's also governing the use of the data, not just for so-called primary use, that's when you visit a physician and wants to provide him some history of your treatment, but also for the secondary use of the health data, which is typically research and development and various types of commercialization. On top of that, the real world data which we are generating in contact with healthcare system are in fact improving the medication approval process, developments of new treatments, because as there's also big data analytics showing that if you study the primary data of up to 25% of randomized clinical trials, you'll find out what has been published just recently in Nature, that many of the results are in fact flawed. Sometimes simply because of human mistake, sometimes because there was some intention to present better data than the reality bring. And that's where the real world data of us patients are in fact bringing to these randomized clinical trial results the reality, because as of right now, for example, Czech GP Association is already for a longer time, like 5, maybe 10 years already, suggesting to GPs that they should not read the new studies, what's the result and so on. They should first read so-called inclusion and exclusion criteria of the randomized clinical trial. And if they won't recognize a single patient they have in their registration, then they should not continue to read it, because it will just mislead them in the practice, giving them some option of treating a patient which you are not meeting in real life. That's how super selective the evidence from RCT can be, and that's why we need real-world data. But to really work with them, it needs to be first solved the data ownership and transparency. It has been already publicly criticized by European Public Service Union. We can see that the real-world data are necessary for the reasonable use of AI in biomedicine research and shortening the time to approving either new treatments or existing treatments for new indications and so on and so forth. But the AI, we are already working for 3 years in Chain Pharmaceutical with OntoSight, is quite often showing where the RCTs are limited and the real-world data are need to plug in to really make informed decisions and conclusions.
What we envision ultimately is that every patient should be able to have control of their own data and be able to license it directly out to anyone that is looking to obtain such data also.
And we are actually going through that paradigm shift where RCT for a long time were set up as the golden standard of evidence-based medicine approach. But in aging society, it's more and more obvious that especially for chronic conditions like chronic untreatable pain, we never had one-size-fits-all options. And we in fact have to really invest in the individualization of treatments to keep the quality of life in the aging population, because what 2-3 decades ago is now changing into a treatment for 2 or 3 decades continuously. And we are seeing that many of the existing treatments are in fact too toxic for such long time of administration. So that's again where the real-world data and real-world evidence is crucial for researching a new application of the approved medications, but also unconventional format, pharma models like medical cannabis is actually. All the various data inputs which we are, as human beings, already generating in the area of health data is already so extensive that, well, how many of you have heard about the new biometrical signature, or, you know, data set 100% recognizing the given person, which is based on 20 seconds of toothbrushing with a smartwatch on your hand. I was also not aware until I read the study, which clearly proved that even with this, how to say it, regular daily habit, where all of us think like, yeah, there are even some methods which we... It creates a unique biometric data set, and it has been already proven in a study that the machine is then able to recognize you per these 20 seconds, whatever else smartwatch, wherever else globally you use, if they are connected, the machine knows it's you. And it's also showing that with the real-world data, we can more focus from the actual research hypothesis of efficacy, and we can already move to effectiveness and looking how for various types of patients, the various suggested standard method can be individualized according to their individual needs.
Oop. There we go.
There we were. Yes. It's not just our vision. Again, you can find already strong support for this transformation by regulatory authorities. There are even specific projects of EMA, which are confirming the growing importance of real-world data in delivering valuable insights into the diseases and medication performance. Because again, quite often in the reality, we see we are not able to achieve the results which the RCT on the super-selective patient populations are showing as the efficacy. And we all have recent experience how the real-world evidence can speed up the search for new treatment methods, which does not necessarily have to fit all, but in the aging society, it's quite often great if it even fits 20%, because in many cases, we don't have any efficient method so far. So during COVID crisis, the RVE were literally accelerating all the process. Mm-hmm. And that's why we decide in Chain Pharmaceutical to define the patient stake principle as a new ethical standard in the digital society dealing with the digital health data. It's based on the Convention on Human Rights in Biomedicine, which is already ensuring individuals' right to access and control their health data. And PSP decouples science, health organizations, and financing, enabling the transparent tracking of real-world data and offering financial compensations to patients for their data usage in research and development and commercialization projects. Because as we started with the story of Henrietta Lacks, it's already confirmed by Kurz globally that our health data are our They don't belong to anybody who launches application giving, you know, long list of terms of use, which no one reads, as we know as well, and making there some tricky formulations where your data are now mine and I can do whatever I can if I like summarize it. So it's not that case, and it's in fact the same situation which Heirs of Henrietta Lacks were dealing last 3 decades, where companies like Thermo Fisher were saying, no, 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 it's our. That we don't care that in fact we are now cultivating potentially more cells than the Henrietta Lacks body had when she was really alive on the various, you know, cell culture lines. And we will simply not compensate you. We will even not ask for your consent. So now it's clearly confirmed that this is not the way for the future.
Yeah, we were very obviously happy when we heard the decision of the court of the U.S. to grant the Lacks family a settlement. Unfortunately, we don't know how much that settlement was, but we can imagine it was quite high because it was 6-7 decades that they were working with her cells. So
there was a 7-digit lump sum, and there are percentage royalties.
Yeah, exactly.
Part of the settlement, what came from some media. Well, so with patient stake principle, the obvious sharing in scaring, which we hear across multiple social media platforms or digital activities, is turning into sharing is caring and earning. Because with patient stake principle and the platforms which are based on it, the patient is not giving the data out. The data are still the patient's. He's just licensing it to those who are interested use them. Can we, please? There are also multiple societal benefits connected, of course, the data security and ownership, where we have already the technology. Or here I have to say that, okay, in 1950, the society didn't have the tools to enable that. Later on, when Henrietta Lacks here start to questioning that approach, there were already the tools, but then there was not the will. So now there is the court decision. And the ownership always stays with the patient, but it's also enhancing the potential creation of international subgroups, because you can connect patients from various environments and get, in fact, again, better insight into what's really going on if we are trying to heal that specific type of patients. It's also accelerating the treatment approval. Our partner Inoplexus, which is running the Onto site already for a decade, they are already seeing 4 times increase of the probability that the new treatment method will be also approved compared to the actual 5.1% of approval rate to the actual research. And you can imagine how big it's being invested into the oncology research. Unfortunately, just 5% of all those investments are bringing some new efficient therapies.
Yeah.
Of course, inclusive patient voice, where we are also seeing now that especially in chronic conditions, it's very difficult to treat the chronic conditions because they are quite often related not just with change of lifestyle, but also sustainability of that change in a time and quite often for few decades. So we also need a feedbacks from patients how they can deal with the daily life complications which the chronic conditions are bringing. Of course, then the passive inheritable income, which the licensing of the patient medical data together with similar type of patient, creating in fact virtual virtual testing groups faster and cheaper than what it means to create them in the real world. And also it's, how to say it, decreasing bit the ethical considerations because we do not need to set the experimental setting. we are using the data which the people are anyway generating as they are taking the care. And based on that, we can have better insight into how the care should be for them individualized.
Exactly. And now and, we get into the first
yes,
use case.
And why? Why we are starting to implement this principle with medical cannabis patient? It's the platform, the HealChain application, which we are finalizing for public testing, and now it's the last stage of internal tests, because you can imagine it's quite also legally demanding to have all the various types of consent and contract proposals and so on fitting into the fair share of the potential stake which the data licensing can bring. We decide to start the implementation with medical cannabis patients as they are, how to say it, the obvious first adopters. Many of them is already doing so on multiple social media platforms, and they are quite often uniquely motivated to help others and in fact learn the word about time to time even miraculous effects which compared to the stage of the chronic conditions and the prognosis they were hearing, then they achieved when start using medical cannabis accordingly. And also this group of patients is already showing how motivated is to help others, because everything what we see now, how the cannabis industry is blossoming in many areas, it has got grassroots in a patient lobby decades ago, starting to open the first medical cannabis access programs, which are now followed with recreational use and so on. But this this is also a unique situation for the clinical medicine, because typically the new methods are coming on so-called top-to-bottom principle. Some research center, some pharma company develops something new and then it's spread across the system. On contrary, medical cannabis programs are literally growing from the ground, where at the very beginning, and still to extend the access, those of you who are watching what's going on in cannabis patients associations are still pushing from the ground to get the medical cannabis accepted by the healthcare system as another option for many actually untreatable conditions.
Mm-hmm. Also, guys, just to put things into perspective for you, the global big data in healthcare market size, does anybody have a guess what we're looking at, how big that market would be? Any idea? It's $32.9 billion USD, and that was in 2021. And it's predicted to reach $106 billion by 2030. And what we want to do with the patient stake principle, and also the means which we're going to use to essentially deploy it, is make sure that patients have their access to this this market that's being basically built on their data that they're producing. You know, and one thing that I just touched on is basically how are we going to deploy this. And the way that we're going to deploy this is with the HealChain app. And the HealChain app will not only achieve everything that we've just explained about the patient stake principle, essentially creating the infrastructure, the means for patients to share their data and to have the control over it. For instance, if there's an opportunity to license their data, there would be an alert pushed to the patient. The patient would see and get to learn about the opportunity if they've met the requirements in terms of the records that they've uploaded. And then they can choose to participate and license their data. And Pavel mentioned that, you know, some of the development stages and features that we've had in this app have been quite rigorous. Also, as it relates to compliance. And we do have a GDPR compliant data vault where patients can securely store their medical records once in the app. You see that we also have a symptom tracker, and this is another important thing to consider, that this app, although it deems it is a means to the end of drug development and implementing the patient stake principle. What the HealChain app actually does also is it creates an unprecedented connection through anybody that has products in the market that wants to connect with their patients and understand how is the treatment going, how are the responses to consumption of their medicine. Even maybe if you want to know, if you have, for example, in Canada, you have companies that have products in the medical market but also in the rec market. And actually, a funny anecdote here. In Toronto, they have now a consumption lounge that is essentially under the guide of research. You are allowed to come in, test recreational cannabis products, and what's required of you is to give some feedback on the appearance, the smell, the taste, and the experience of consuming the product. This is done in Canada by inviting people to come to one physical place. Imagine you could do that in reaching thousands or hundreds of thousands or even millions of patients or consumers to get this kind of feedback on a much larger scale. For patients, for instance, we have, as I showed in the previous screen, the symptom tracker. So you can choose what your symptoms are, and as you are consuming your medicine different days of the week over time, record how you are improving or not, and what how the medicine may be helping you. And again, I say the medicine because this is not only limited to medical cannabis. The other great thing about this app is that for anybody that has products out on the market, you're, like I said, able to connect to your patients in a way that is unprecedented up until now. And believe me, I think we can all agree that we've seen some very interesting initiatives from some companies in the industry trying to connect with their patients. Here now, you can actually have targeted deployment of content. You can have communities within the communities. And also one of the things that Pavel was talking on, you can find your twin. That means if there's somebody in the ecosystem that has a similar profile to you from your ailment, your age, sex, whatever, you can actually connect to them, chat with them, and also talk to them about their experiences, what has helped them, what has helped you, and sharing is caring, right?
Yes. These services are already working in our sister apps, Curia and Nuria, where altogether is already registered close to 3 million. I think 2.2 is in Curia, mostly oncology. It's for oncology patient. Nuria for a neurologic patient is now trying to reach the first million. Well, and it's not just the app, but the overall ecosystem and the platform in backend assisted with AI and machine learning tools, which is making the suggestions based on the patient profiles, the data, how they share, how they can also be beneficial, what's already showing in the sister apps, and also various studies that for especially new oncology patient is quite often the most valuable part of getting them compliant to the new treatment is to connect them with more experienced patient with the same conditions, which is able to share what I already mentioned, that we as a physicians are able to tell some diagnosis, indications, treatment plans, prognosis. But we will not tell you what does it mean to live daily next decade with such condition, which 3 decades ago was totally debilitating. And now people are surviving for decades with them, which is bringing this peer-to-peer moment, very essential part of be able dealing with the chronic conditions of aging.
Yeah.
Population.
We did start a little late, so we went a little bit over here, but for anybody that's interested, if you'd like to download the Patient Stake Principle white paper, you can scan this QR code and the document will actually pop up on your phone directly. Just leave this up for 1 second. If anybody wants to scan it still. If you want to scan it afterwards or if you didn't get a chance, if it's not working, let me know. You can also visit the Chain Pharmaceuticals homepage. You can scan this QR code and you'll land on our homepage if you like. And you can contact us. And if you are interested in staying up to date with what we got going on, the launch of our app, if you're interested in putting your products in our ecosystem to get that connection to your patients, then we're happy to speak. Again, our mission ultimately is drug development with patients actually benefiting from their contribution to the drug development, and in the meantime, offering companies an unprecedented connection to their consumers and patients. And with that note, thank you guys for listening. And if you also would like to have a copy of the presentation or something, including the references that we used, then just let us know. And thank you very much. Have a great rest of the conference.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can find more podcasts on our channel, and we look forward to welcoming you to one of our upcoming events. All dates are available at cb-net.com.